And we'll move to our second case this morning, which is Gil Fillon versus Bradley University. All right, I see both counsel. Mr. Bach, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jason Bach. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this case, Grace Gil Fillon. It is our contention here today that had Bradley University provided the accommodations that their own disability office approved, Ms. Gil Fillon would have been a graduate of Bradley University and not here as a litigant here today. The district court erred in determining that Ms. Gil Fillon was not qualified or otherwise qualified to be a student at Bradley University in the physical therapy program. The district court was required to determine whether or not the plaintiff was qualified at the time of the discrimination and not at the time of her dismissal. And in our opening brief and in our reply brief, we cite to the Kahn versus Midwestern University out of this circuit for that held that a university needs to look at whether or not a student was qualified when they ask for that accommodation the first time, not when they make a determination to dismiss that student after asking for accommodations for a number of months, or in this case, a year and a half. Bradley has not alleged that any of the accommodations that Ms. Gil Fillon requested were unreasonable. Ms. Gil Fillon asserts that she was denied accommodations that were required to give her meaningful access, and had she been granted those accommodations, she would not have struggled academically like she did. The district court points to timeliness and professionalism issues as an example of Ms. Gil Fillon not being otherwise qualified. What the court failed to consider were that these issues involving timeliness, or what the university called unprofessionalism, were actually manifestations of her disability, which is the reason why she was asking for additional time as one of the reasonable accommodations that she was requesting and that the university had ultimately granted her, but failed to implement and actually provide her those accommodations. Under the Kahn analysis, the district court's analysis was improper in even considering these issues of unprofessionalism or timeliness, because again, we're talking about issues that developed after she requested accommodations and were the basis of what the university used as her dismissal from the university.
Mr. Bach, I've got a question about how, in your view, we should measure the failure to accommodate claim here. Let me give you a specific example from the record of what I mean. If we look at the fall of 2016, that fall semester, your client asked for three forms of assistance: note-taking, time, extra time for tests, and extra time to turn in assignments. Two of the three requests were accommodated. She was given note-taking assistance and more time for tests, but she was not given extra time to submit assignments. Is that one failure enough to create a jury issue in your view? And if so, why?
I believe that it's enough to create a jury issue on that particular on that particular course. However, when we're talking about her time in the entire program, I think we have to look at the totality of the accommodation requests and the totality of the refusal to implement the accommodations that were approved.
What do you mean by totality? Your client attended the university, attended classes, classes occurred by semester. So you're suggesting don't measure whether there was a failure to accommodate each semester. Measure it across all of her time within the program?
No, Your Honor, what I'm saying is that is an example of a genuine issue of a material fact that we believe needs to still be resolved by the district court. But we believe that that's just one of many examples that are left unresolved and should be decided at the time of trial. So I'm not saying that that's not enough. I believe that it is, but I think that it is just one of many examples that a jury should have been allowed to consider. Your Honors, the Bradley University accepted Ms. Gilfillan into their program as a qualified student. They determined before they accepted her that she was qualified, and they testified to that at the time of deposition. Ms. Gilfillan appropriately requested accommodations in her second semester in the program. Accommodations were approved by Bradley University's disability office. The professors and the department that she was in decided to treat those approved accommodations as requests. Over time, the department refused to provide these accommodations as they deemed them to be only requests. By the spring of 2017, these requests for accommodations by Ms. Gilfillan formed a significant basis for the department to put Ms. Gilfillan on probation, which ultimately set up the issue that took place in the fall of 2017 when she was not permitted to have any additional time. An assignment was late, and she ultimately received a D in that course, which led to her dismissal. It is our contention that had Ms. Gilfillan been provided the accommodations that Bradley approved, if she would have been provided the accommodations that they actually approved, she would not have been in the situation that she found herself in 2017, and she would have completed and graduated from the program. At this point, I would like to reserve the remaining time that I have.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Kohlhaas?
Good morning. Bill Kohlhaas for Bradley. The plaintiff requested accommodations for what she called academic coaching and extended deadlines. Academic coaching, simply not an accommodation, and there doesn't seem to be much discussion of that this morning. But with respect to extended deadlines, the plaintiff's interpretation of extended deadlines is as long as she could ask prior to a due date, then she was automatically entitled to extensions. Now, her takeoff point for her argument on this relates primarily to the course called PT 820, in which, by the way, she received an A. But at the beginning of that class, and this is docket 21-1 at page 95, 96, and 97, there was an email sent to various professors, and the classroom access on page 95 notation says, "I may request additional time for assignments. These requests may be approved or denied by the professor." In this case, we're talking about Dr. Tibbett, the department chair, and his response, "Thank you, Grace," and this is at page 97, at 21-1. "I believe that our assignments in PT 820 are well laid out with realistic timeframes. I look for you to complete all your assignments for the class on the date they are due." The very syllabus for that course indicates that extensions can be granted. There were extensions granted, including to the plaintiff, but the concept that she had was, well, whenever I want something, I'll request it. Now, she contends that because of what Dr. Tippett said here, well, she just knew that she would never get any kind of an extension. But an important circumstance is the situation involving PT 816, where she received the D. And when you look at the record there, you see that what happened was she was late multiple times, but never, ever once requested an extension. The district court correctly noted in its memorandum opinion that there were a number of occasions on which extensions were granted to the plaintiff, but you cannot have in this type of a program a situation where a student can say, well, I want to finish this after the semester or whenever I get around to it. There's no debate that this program at Bradley is a rigorous 3-year lockstep program that is designed to produce qualified, autonomous practitioners of physical therapy.
Mr. Colhase, is the way the district court measured the provision of the accommodation, as you just articulated, looking at the record and saying, well, you know, there were a lot of times, a lot of different semesters where Bradley did offer various accommodations. Is that legally correct? And let me give you a hypothetical. Suppose, for example, there was a student that was blind that needed a laptop computer in class. The university appropriately agreed, of course, we'll give you a laptop. And the student said, it also helps for me to sit in the front of the room, front of the lecture hall, or front of the classroom. And the university said, of course, we'll accommodate that too. And in 2 of 8 semesters, the university didn't do so. Didn't provide the laptop, didn't provide the seating. Would your position there be, well, you know, they did it six out of eight semesters, that's good enough?
It would be good enough if the student without accommodation passed those classes and the student's academic standing was not diminished. That would be the case here. If a failure to accommodate resulted in a negative impact on the student's academic performance, I would agree, as Your Honor is implying, that may not be adequate.
That surprises me. Would you take that position if a student needed a wheelchair ramp to get in an academic building? Would you say, well, you know, they passed the semester, so the absence of a ramp wasn't a big problem?
I think that the case law does include, Your Honor, a causation element that has to be met. There are two different things going on here, however. The failure to accommodate and the intentional discrimination, both of them are combined in the count one that we're dealing with here. I think that the failure to accommodate, perhaps in a physical disability situation, as you're describing, where the student couldn't have the benefit of being in the classroom, could have an impact, but and could cross the line to a violation. But here, what we're talking about is extending deadlines that would really change the measurement of performance. And, you know, the McGregor versus LSU case, where they dealt with the issue of under 504, could a student say, I need part-time attendance in order to accommodate my issues. That's effectively what the plaintiff here was trying to do.
I thought your client agreed to these forms of accommodation. Are you saying no? We didn't agree to any of them, any at all, ever.
Not at all. All accommodations that were granted were provided. If I said that we weren't obligated to provide any accommodations, I apologize. I certainly didn't mean to say that.
Well, no, you didn't say it that declaratively. But when you were talking about, you know, the teacher and that PT 20 or whatever the first class was you mentioned, you know, it was up to her, his discretion.
Right. And she never, in that class, Your Honor, she never specifically asked for any extension, period. And it was never denied. In fact, in this record, you cannot point to any circumstance where there was a class with an assignment where the plaintiff said, I need an extension for that assignment, and the professor at a time when this accommodation was in effect said, no, that's denied.
So is the proper way to measure this then semester by semester, accommodation by accommodation?
Yes.
Did the district court do that?
On the bottom line result of being not qualified, no. But the overall result was well within what was dictated by the university's handbook for this class. And while it wasn't specifically relied on as the reason that the plaintiff was dismissed, she did get a D in a class where she never requested any extensions. That by itself was sufficient to support the dismissal. So with my time just about expired, if there are any questions, I'd like to address them. Otherwise, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bach.
Thank you. I want to address what Bradley's assertion that Ms. Gilfillan never requested additional time in the course that she ultimately received the D in, and which led to her dismissal, was with the PT 816. And the record reflects that Ms. Gilfillan was informed before that semester even began that she would not be provided any additional time on her assignments. So at that point, requesting additional time from her professor would have been futile. And it was, she'd already had several meetings with these instructors before that semester began, and it was made very clear to her that any request in that course or her other course for additional time would not be granted.
But Mr. Bach, wasn't the extended deadline accommodation a qualified one, that it required professor approval and was course specific? So that any of the professors could withhold extended deadlines if extended deadlines was inconsistent with the teaching objectives.
That is what the accommodation approval form stated. However, we believe that that was erroneous as well. We do not believe that the law allows for an accommodation that has been once a disability has been established and a need for a certain accommodation has been established based on that disability, we do not believe that the university, either at their disability resource office or an instructor, has the discretion to decide whether or not they want to grant a request to approve an accommodation or not. So yes, the document did say that the instructors had that ability, but we believe that that also was a violation of Section 504 and ADA as well.
What, do you have some authority to back that up?
I don't have any authority that I can present here to you right now that says that. However, just in reading various case law, I've never come across a case where a instructor is given any type of discretion to determine whether or not an accommodation should be approved or not approved. They certainly, most instructors have no qualifications to make that determination. I see that my time has expired. If there are no further questions, I will submit this matter on the briefs.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.